Brian, 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 Brian. He's a rock star, guys. Yes.
So much. I have been thinking about you nonstop since the last time we were together, which was last night. And I even got some sleep, so I'm very happy. And I've thank you. Let me just push me back on this chair.
Give it up for Michael for making this happen.
Go. Okay.
She's got a
thank you.
Guest to escort him around the country. So
awesome.
I decided since this is going to be our last time together this time, I would dress up as close to Howard as possible. So I wore a white shirt, tie, got some glasses, and I don't know, I look like Howard. he's my dear friend and my idol, and I love him so much. He's such a great guy, just a wonderful guy. I learned so much from him. Now, you and I are going to learn a few things today that will change your life. My guarantee is that if you follow what I share with you, you will double and triple your income. And I know, because I have done this with thousands of people all over the world, and everyone who followed these ideas, which are very simple, has doubled and tripled their income. And not in 1 year, like I guaranteed for my coaching program, but in less than 30 days. And so the only question is, will you apply it? It's like I'm giving you a car with a map quest on it and a direction, and I'm giving you the keys and a full tank, and your job is just to get in the car, turn it on, and follow the map quest to your destination. If you will do that, I promise you, it'll double your income. And you know, the 80-20 rule says 80% of people can't do it. They want to, they wish they could, they struggle, but there's so much interesting stuff on television. They just got to go home and watch TV until they're too tired to watch TV. Then they crawl off to bed. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. You see, when you say to the person with you, honey, I'm too tired to watch it anymore. Me too. Let's go to bed. And you get up in the morning, and the first thing you do is you have a cup of coffee and turn on the television. And I know nobody here does that. I'm talking about those other people that aren't here, the ones that don't know what's good for them. And you may, can I maybe identify with that? Because I've done the same thing. It's so easy. It's so tempting. The greatest enemy of success is called the comfort zone. The comfort zone is we get comfortable doing something in a certain way, and we do it more and more often, and what begins as a tendency becomes a habit. And I'll give you one little piece of advice that I started giving in my two-day Psychology of Achievement seminar, and I got so much feedback on this advice, and it was what I call the hour of power. I think I learned that from Robert Schuller. When you go home at night, after work, spend the first hour just talking face-to-face with the people at home, with your spouse or with your kids. Ask them about their day. Listen to them carefully when they talk and don't interrupt. Talk to your kids, however age they're at, and ask them what they did today and how's everything going, how are they feeling. Spend the first hour reconnecting with the most important people in your world. The people that you would want to be with if something was seriously wrong with you. So just spend the first hour, the hour of power, and don't touch the remote, the one we fight over. You give me that. That's mine. I paid for that damn thing. You give me that. I know you don't know what I'm talking about, he said. So, and you'll be surprised. It's amazing. The whole rest of the day, whole rest of the evening goes better. In the morning, this is just an addition to the hour of power, in the morning, tell everybody there that you love them before you go to work. Make it sort of a ritual. Go and say, I'm going to head for work now. Goodbye. I love you. Have a good day. And you do that let's say for one day, and you totally change the dynamic at home. It's amazing, darn thing. No matter how good you think your relationships are, there's nothing like putting that icing on the top of the cake and tell them in the morning, in the evening, come, you go and see them and make sure they understand they're more important than the television. Remember, when you turn on the television, you're telling everybody else in the room, the television is more important than you. And is that what you want? Now, they've studied rich people in television. I know, I didn't mean to get off on this jag. That was not part of it. They started rich people and television. They say the first thing that rich people do is they create a television room. And they put their television in that room. And you have to get up from the family room and your desk and everything else. And you have to go to that room and into that room and turn on the television to watch it. You know what that does? It cuts down television watching by about 80% for rich people. And then what do rich people do with that other time? They spend it on their family, and they spend it planning to become richer and reading books and listening to audio programs or watching videos. You know that YouTube has some of the best business videos in the history of the world, and they're all free. Oh, it's amazing. When people tell me what they saw on YouTube, I'm just flabbergasted. It was stuff that was never available, ever, and it's there at your fingertips for pennies. But the thing is, the television, we say, can make you rich or make you poor. It'll make you rich if you turn it off. It'll make you poor if you turn it on. So every time you turn on that, take that television control, this is your wealth button. Turn it on, be poor. Don't turn it on and do something else, even if it's just physical fitness or health or something else. But especially spending time with the people you love. If you do that, you become a better, more positive, happier, more successful, better organized, everything else. Oh, so I was reading all my notes here today, and I came across the 7 benefits of time management. Howard has asked me to speak on personal productivity, which became a love of mine many years ago, and I'm now world famous for my books and tapes and courses on increasing your productivity. Now, you only have a certain number of hours in the day where you can work at your peak, and they last until shortly after noon, and then you start to get tired, and that's why people cut the workday off at 5 o'clock, you know, 8 or 9 to 5, or 5:30, because people are just too tired. So the critical thing is to get as much as you can done early. But here's the 7 benefits I came up with, and I wrote them out this morning. I thought, geez, I'll share this with my friends. This is good stuff. I'll even practice it myself. Okay, so we say here, the highest payoffs you'll enjoy from excellent time management. We're starting with the end in mind. As Stephen Covey would say, as we are going to the end of the whole discussion, and then we'll go back to the beginning. And so we say, number one, you will earn more money. Yes, just as we say, you'll MMM by SMSing. And there is no other way, by the way. I don't mean to be the bearer of bad tidings, but there is no distant relative who's going to die and leave you a lot of money in secret. It ain't going to happen. Stop waiting by the mailbox for the announcement. Number two is where you'll earn more money. And there is no other way for you to earn more money than to use your time differently and use more of it. Number two is you'll feel more satisfied with your work and your purpose in life. In other words, you'll be a happier person. There's people who are productive, just feel wonderful about themselves. God has given us a productive gene. This gene, when it's activated, like turning on the lights in a ballroom like this, when it's activated, makes you happy, and you activate it by doing things that are good for you. Whenever you do anything that is productive, that's good for you, that advances your life, you feel happy. You unlock what are called in the brain endorphins. And endorphins are called nature's happy drug. And just like you can get addicted to negative drugs, you can get addicted to an endorphin. And you begin to develop a memory. Whenever I complete a task, I feel happy. And you become oriented like a guided missile toward doing things that make you happy all the time. And whenever you plan and use your time well, it makes you happy. It releases endorphins. It gives you motivation. It's the most wonderful darn thing. And you have total control of it. Martin Seligman wrote a book a few years ago, which is a seminal book on happiness. It's called Learned Happiness. It's how do you learn how to be a happy person? Like you learn how to walk as a child and ride a bicycle as an older child and then drive a car and so on. How do you learn how to be just happy all the time? And what he found is that if you just do certain things over and over again, repetitively, what do you develop? You develop a habit. So you can develop the habit of happiness and it just kicks in. You wake up in the morning and you're happy. And as you go through the day, you're just a genuinely happy person. And we say, you know, something happens. Another word that starts with S. But some things happen that are not positive, and so you shrug them off. Say, well, it happens. like Forrest Gump. Well, it happens. It's another word, but Albert told me not to say it. But he did say that the word rhymes with the word spit. Whatever it might be, you know, we could say spit happens, but it doesn't have the same effect as the real one. So the third advantage of our conversation today is you will be happier and more positive. In fact, another very fine doctor wrote a book, and it was called Positive Addiction, as opposed to Learned Happiness. Positive Addiction, he talked about how people become addicted to the positive drugs of dopamine and the other one I just said. Serotonin and the neighbor's happiness drug. What did I say? No. Endorphins, thank you very much. Oxytocin, I know that one too. Yeah, oxytocin, don't take that too much, you know. Wink, wink, nod, nod, you know. Anyway, so with endorphins and dopamines, whenever you do something that is good for you, positive, productive, valuable, that you enjoy doing, that other people like, you get applause or approval, whatever it happens, the drugs are released, and if you keep doing these positive things, which you're going to do after our talk together, if you do these positive things every day, like writing down your 10 goals every day, what happens is soon you start triggering endorphins and dopamines automatically, you become a drug addict. But to positive drugs that make you happier, healthier, better, and more motivated. And it takes about a month. People say 21 days. My friend Dan Sullivan had a great example. He said, you can develop a habit in 3 seconds for life. Simple. He said, imagine putting your hand on a hot stove and burning your hand because you didn't check if the element was hot. You'll know how, and you'll have a habit of never touching hot stoves again for the rest of your life. One experience can get so. But the psychology says about 33 times. You don't change habits, you change behaviors. And all of your habits are still there. They're under the surface. They're just lurking. They're bad habits. They're waiting to come out, which is why people go to AA. They get off of alcohol, but then they go to AA every week and they just talk with other people about not drinking. And that keeps the habit in place. But people never say, I am an ex-alcoholic. They say, I am an alcoholic who doesn't drink anymore. Because with alcoholism, they say, one drink is never enough, and too many drinks is never enough. So you just start with one drink, and that leads to too many. Anyway, my point is that the habits lurk. They're waiting under the surface. You can replace them, replace bad habits with good habits, but you must be vigilant. And for a long time, and in 33 repetitions of a behavior where you used to start a little bit later, now you start earlier. Get up at 6 a.m. or before 6 a.m. I set my clock for 5:50 8. I try to get every minute. And 5:58, I wake up and I get up. Wake up and get up and move. Do that. Don't lay in bed. That's a fool's game because sleep will creep up on you. And you go back to it. Anyway, so wake up, get up, and start moving. I'm going to talk to you about a daily process that'll double and triple your income and make you rich. I don't want to talk about it now because you're not interested enough yet. You will earn higher levels of self-respect and self-esteem when you manage your time well. I talk throughout my career about self-esteem, because self-esteem is how much you like yourself, how much you respect yourself, how much you look at yourself and say, I am a good person. The more you like yourself, the higher your goals. The more you like yourself, the more your determination. The more you like yourself, the more you like other people and the more they like you. Now, how do you get all the benefits of self-esteem? We've told you before, you use the magic affirmation, which may be the best single affirmation in any language. And I've spoken to people with 55 different languages who have their own version of it. It's ich mag mich, which is I like myself in German. And it's in Spanish and French and everything else. Just say the words, I like myself. Yeah, well, please take your thumb out of your mouth and let's try it again. Say the words, I like myself.
I like myself.
Once more, I like myself.
I like myself.
Now, what you just did without even trying is you just introduced a flood of endorphins and dopamine into your system and you feel better about yourself. Not only that, you look around the people at your table and you like them better. Just because you like yourself more. So therefore, one of the very best things you could do when you go into a sales situation, get yourself psychologically pumped. Take what we call these magic pills. And the magic pills are affirmations, statements about the person you are and the person you want to be. I like myself. I like myself. I like myself. I like myself. The other one, number one reason for failure in life is fear of failure. It's not failing. God knows you've done that so many times you can't even count it. I mean, you guys are professional failures. That's what Howard told me. These guys are not thumbsuckers. These guys have gone out there and gotten their butt kicked so many times they don't know where else to kick it because it's so sore. I mean, these guys have failed over and over and over again. Every time you make a sales presentation and they decide to not buy from you, or even worse, God darn it, they buy from your competitors. Oh, geez, that hurts. Oh, no, don't twist the knife. Yeah. My point is that you failed. So failure is not your problem. The only thing is the fear of failure. Failure is actually good because failure tells you, just like if you're going through the woods, tells you what path to take to be successful. And so therefore, every single failure, as we said before, is just feedback. It's God's way of telling you, since the only way you're going to learn is with a... Howard told me not to say it, but it has something to do with a slap. The only way you're going to learn is by hurting. We only learn by pain. If it doesn't hurt, we don't learn anything. So therefore, what you're going to do is you're going to have experiences that give you pain and hurt, and they're part of the price that you pay to be rich. All rich people have been through stuff, rhymes with spit, that you cannot imagine. And they have bounced back, and they bounced back, and they bounced back, and you bounce back. You are bouncers. You never stop. You keep going. You are unstoppable. And you keep telling yourself that, I am unstoppable. I never give up. I can do it. I can do anything I put my mind to. Temporary setbacks are just stepping stones to success on the road. And you're going to have bang your knees and bang your ankles and you're going to step back up again and learn the lesson and keep moving ahead. Nothing is going to stop you except a .45 caliber pistol and they better get the shot in right the first time or I'll rip their head off. I mean, right? Right? Say yes.
Yes.
Okay. I know you're not quite awake yet, but all right. So you'll enjoy higher levels of self-esteem and self-respect when you manage your time better. You'll feel terrific about yourself as you increase your time management and your productivity. You'll get paid more and promoted faster. You'll make more money. There is no other way to make more money than to do more things and to do more productive things. That's real, shows what you're talking about. And finally, as you become more productive, you'll earn the respect and esteem of everybody around you. People will look up to you. People will use you as an example. Your children will look up to you and become like you, as I've seen in my life, is that you, as you become better and better in using your time, you become a more valuable and interesting and positive person for everybody else. So the payoffs are tremendous. Now, yesterday, I promised you I would give you a couple of formulas, and then I didn't do it because we ran out of time. So I'm going to give you a formula now, and then a second formula. The first formula is how to set and achieve any goal. It's 7 steps, and I've worked this out after speaking to millions of people in thousands of seminars and written 96 books as of last week. And I'm on track to write 4 more. Next time I see you, I'll be at 100 books. Think about that. Yeah. And one of them is I'm going to sneak in a co-authorship with Howard. And yes. And we're going to write the book together, but Howard is going to be the primary author. And then I'm going to have the name Brian Tracy in little letter. No, not so little. Maybe a little bit bigger. I'm going to have a little Howard Partridge, a big binder. I'm trying to negotiate equal billing with him. If we had the same type place on the front, all right? And I'll tell you, by the way, I'll tell you an interesting story. Stephen Covey wrote the book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. It was published by my publishers, Simon & Schuster. The book came out in hardcover and sold a few thousand copies and then slowed down. There wasn't much promotion. Simon & Schuster are not very helpful in that area. No need to go there. But the book came out and sold a few thousand copies in hardcover, and they decided not to continue with the book because they weren't happy with the results. They hadn't done anything to help sales except send it out to some of the bookstores. Anyway, that's before Amazon. So the literary agent came to me and said, "Can you help me with this book?" Because her name was Joe. Wonderful. Wonderful, smart woman from Dallas, and not Houston, but Dallas. So she said, "Can you help me?" I said, "Well, I would be pleased to write an introduction or a testimonial line for the book." She said, "I'm trying to convince them at Simon & Schuster to bring the book out in soft cover at a lower price." The hardcover that time was $22. The lower price would be $10 or $12. And maybe that will get the book selling. Well, at this time, I was speaking all the time, everywhere, thousands of people. So I was better known than Stephen was. And Stephen was a fine man, fine man. And so I said, sure. So I wrote a book. I wrote a testimonial. It said, "Stephen Covey is the new American Socrates." And they took that, and she took that to the literary agent at Simon & Schuster, a man named Bob Bender. He said, "With this heading, we'll bring it out in paperback." So they brought it out in paperback, and today it sold 17 million copies. One of the best-selling books, 7 Habits of Effective People, in the history of personal development. And he said it was the line, "This Stephen Covey is the new American Socrates." And they put it above the title. So the first thing people saw in a bookstore was that, and people wanted to be wiser and better and so on, so they bought the book. And the book then began to sell in its own merits, and it became one of the best-selling books in history. And they told me it was your testimonial title, that little line, that turned it around completely and bringing it out in soft cover. So what we'll do is we'll get someone really important to write us something nice at the top of the page. And we'll discuss that. Because testimonials are good, and we'll ask you to give us some testimonials as well. Just like basically say, this is a good book, you should read it, in case you're wondering what to write in a testimonial. It's pretty simple. Just I get off track there. But we will write a book, and I will get to 100, and you just can pick up the pace, and you can almost catch me, maybe.
I'm there.
But this book is written for you, and in a way, it's written by you. It's basically the 12 principles of building an entrepreneurial business and making
the ingredients.
To build an entrepreneurial business in every area, and there are some areas like how to hire the best people that are really good, how to innovate and market and find new products and services in existing stuff that is just priceless, and it's taken us lifetimes and other people we've read lifetimes to come up with them. And sometimes one idea will make you rich. So your idea, and you never know what the idea is. So your job is to take in as many ideas as possible until you recognize the right one, and you'll recognize it. Something will go off, and you say, that's a great idea. And many people come to it running. They've come to it in a seminar. They've come to it sleeping and woken up. But the one idea is waiting for you to make you rich. Okay, now let me tell you how to set and achieve any goal. Step number one is decide exactly what you want. Decide exactly what you want. By the way, it's a very good question to ask someone else. Tell me exactly what you want to accomplish in life. Because people are general. They say, well, I want to be better off, or I want to be richer, I want to have lots of money and a big house. Those are not goals. Those are fantasies. They're wishes. They're hopes. They're dreams. They have the power of cigarette smoke in a big room. It just disappears. But when you write it down, number two is write it down and make it measurable. I cannot tell you how important writing it down is. All the powers of the universe are waiting for you to write down your goal. And then they'll start to work 24 hours a day to bring your goal. But the goal must be clear. It must be so clear, as Einstein said, that a six-year-old child can read your goal and tell it clearly to another six-year-old child, and they both would know exactly what you want to accomplish. If a six-year-old child can't understand it, then it's not a goal, it's just a fantasy, okay? And write it always in the present tense, as if it has already been achieved. Now, there is a scientific reason for this, and it's called cognitive dissonance. Now, cognitive dissonance is when you get an idea that is in conflict with your existing self. So let's say you are earning $100,000 a year, and you say, I earn $250,000 a year. Goal, all right? You say it in the present tense, as though it was already a reality. And then that drops into your subconscious mind, and your subconscious says, hey, wait a minute. According to all my data, you're only earning $100,000. What's this $250,000 stuff? And you say, no, I earn $250,000. Say it over and over. I earn $250,000 a year. How much do you earn? I earn $250,000 a year or more. And your subconscious mind says, all right, you're the boss. I'll get to work on it. And so your subconscious mind then calls your superconscious mind and says, can you help me with this? He says he earns $250,000. According to me, my records, he only earns $100,000. He says, well, if that's his goal, he's the boss, how do we get him there? And it creates a cognitive dissonance, like two symbols clashing together. The old message and the new message. Bang, 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 bang. And what happens is all the powers of the universe go to work to bring you to that new goal. They're just following your orders. You say you want 250, by gum, you get 250. But if you don't, you don't. And that's why it's so important to write it down repeatedly over and over. Keep reminding your subconscious that this is the new reality. 250 is the new reality. Yes, 100 was fine. Now it's 250. Get to work on it. and your subconscious mind works 24 hours a day, and then brings in your superconscious from the next room with the supercomputer, and they work 24 hours a day to bring your goal to you and to bring you to your goal. And everything that starts to happen around you is moving you toward the goal. And then somewhere in the future, and sometimes it's far faster than you realize, sometimes it's not. Sometimes we have a recession or a depression or something, and it slows down the accomplishment. But sooner or later, there you are at 250,000. And you know what? People say, gee, you sure were lucky. They always claim that successful people who work their butts off were lucky. They were just lucky. No, there's no luck. You're sitting and watching television while they're studying and working and preparing and managing their time and getting up and getting on and kicking butt. And then you say, well, they were lucky. Well, no. Anyway, so it takes a while to be successful. So that's number one, is decide exactly what you want. And number two is write it down and make it measurable. Number three is set a deadline. And my friend Don Hudson has a wonderful line, one of my favorite lines in history. He said, there are no unreasonable deadlines. There's no unreasonable deadlines. There's just delays in accomplishing the deadline. So if you set a deadline and you don't achieve it by the deadline, set a new deadline. That's all. And if you don't achieve it, set a new deadline. Set a deadline that you think is realistic, and if it turns out that you're not there, set a new deadline. No unrealistic goals, just unrealistic deadlines. Why? Because you haven't achieved this goal before, so you cannot have a clear idea of how long it's going to take. But you've got to have a target to aim at. So write it down and say, I earn X number of dollars by December 31st, 2025. Write it down. Or 2026. Write it down. And keep repeating that. Keep drilling it. There's a famous story in Search of Excellence. And they talk about this oil company. It's one of the most successful oil companies in the industry. And the industry is very competitive. And they asked him, well, why do you think you are so much more successful than the average oil company? He said, we all got the same drills, and we all got the same leases, and we all got the same people and wells and so on. He said, but we just drill more holes. We just drill more holes. Now, what does that mean? They just try more things. They call in more customers. You. How do you become successful? Drill more holes. Drilling a hole means there's no guarantee, but there's one guarantee that if you don't drill a hole, you never find anything. If you don't call in a customer, you will never make an additional sale. By the way, here's a simple way to double your income that I've taught to thousands, tens of thousands of professional entrepreneurs and salespeople. You can do this in 1 week. Double your income within 1 week. Not a year, but a week. This is one of the things I used to teach in my coaching program. And everybody said, there's a bunch of bull, you know what. And I said, no, this is true. And they said, I've been in my business for 10 years. You can't say I can double my income in a week. I'm already working full blast and blah, blah. I said, well, okay. Then my great question is, however skeptical you are, why don't you give it a try? And people said, all right, I'll try and I'll prove that you are full of you know what. And that's not true. You can't possibly do that. I said, so here's my way of doubling your income. The average business person, salesperson, calls on two new customers per day. Two new potential customers per day. All the rest of the time, they're talking and having coffee and checking their email and reading the paper and talking to their friends and going for lunch. If you followed a person around with a camera and then played it back for them and said, this is your typical day, they would throw up. They would be sick to their stomach when they looked at how much time they wasted and how little time you actually worked. Now, that's just a definition. Your business depends upon getting new customers who buy more and tell their friends. Is that correct? Say yes. I'm going to have somebody walk around and smack people in the back of the head. guess they're not awake yet. All right, then if you want to increase your income, you need to talk to more people. It's called FaceTime. So when are you working? When are you actually working if your income goals and your business goals are determined by the number of sales that you make? You're actually working when you're contacting customers. All the rest of the time is warm up and warm down, mostly warm down, and not calling on customers. So the average, based on national, international statistics, is 2 per day, and you want to double your income, call on 4 per day, 4 new people per day. Call them up and ask them to buy your product. Call them up and ask them for an appointment to see if you can't help them achieve their goals faster and more predictably, whatever they happen to be. In other words, you call them up and lead with the most important benefit that they will enjoy if they use your product, and ask them for a few minutes to show them what you've got, and they can decide for themselves. I always say that, let me show you what you have, what I have, and you can decide for yourself. Oh, no pressure, it's just information. And when you speak to people, you speak to people online, if you speak to a person, is you focus on them. It's the customer, customer, customer. So if you speak to 4 new people a day, and the average is speaking to 2, and by the way, if I asked you how many new people you speak to each day, there's probably nobody in this room keeps track. Oh, I speak to people all day long. I speak to so many people, really. Give me a list. Oh, I don't have a list. I've got it all in my mind. Sure you do. You can't even find your car in a parking lot. And you're telling me you got such a great memory? Write it down. Jeez, I can't tell you. If you write it down, you're going to be rich. And if you don't write it down, you're going to be poor, and you're going to worry about money all the time. Write it down. It's magic, as Howard will tell you. When you write down your goals and review them and rewrite them and upgrade them and so on, you release all the powers of the universe to help you to achieve your goal. I dreamt once, I fantasized once, and I'll show you how to become a millionaire. I realized one day I was walking down the street, I still remember, I was in Edmonton, Alberta, and it was winter, it was cold as death. And I was walking down the street, and I realized I wanted to be a millionaire. I was 32 years old, I had a good job, but I wanted to be a millionaire all my life. And I still wasn't close, I wasn't deeply in debt, just a little bit, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod. And living in a rented apartment with rented furniture and hoping for the best. I realized I'd never made a decision to become a millionaire. I just wished and hoped, which is what almost everybody does. If you ask a bum on the street, have you ever wanted to be a millionaire? Oh, absolutely. He'll look up from the lane on the street and say, yeah, millionaire, yeah, good. You know, in other words, everybody wants to be a millionaire, but nobody makes a decision to do it. So you make a decision to do it. And you start off, I'm going to show you the process of going from where you are to millionaire status. That's my next little thing I've saved up for you. Anyway, so number 3 write it down and make it measurable so that you can tell what it is and how close you are to it. Your superconscious computer needs specifics. It's like if you imagine you have a dream to have a dream house. Now maybe you have a dream house or you don't, but let me give you an example. I was talking to Austin about this before I came up here. Is my wife and I learned about this technique to find and to live in your dream house. And what you do is you take a sheet of paper and you write down everything that would be in your dream house. So what Barbara and I did when we got married, we actually lost all our money when we started our first business, which is what you do. That's God's way of schooling you. This is your final exams. Lose all your money. And park your car around the corner so that the repo people can't find it. Anyway, I know you don't know anything about that. But anyway, so you write down a description. And we came up with about 42 things that we wanted in our dream house. And we bought magazines like Better Homes and Gardens and Architectural Digest. that were filled with pictures of beautiful homes. And we wrote it down. And we said, well, this would be a great feature. And wrote it down. This would be a great feature. House, car, bedroom, bathroom, living room, and everything. Write it down. And then we went out on two weekends where they were holding open houses in the best neighborhoods. And we would get into the open houses and walk around as if we owned the house. And we'd say, yeah, we'd want more of that. We'd take that out. We'd like this. And we finally developed a mutual vision of the perfect home and wrote it down. And we moved from one home, which was rented, which moved to a home we bought, and then had a bigger home that we bought, and a bigger home that we bought, but we knew they weren't the dream house. And then we came to California, looked at 150 houses, and we walked into this house, the one we're in today, and we said, this is it. It's got everything. We took out the list after we bought the house. It had 41 of 42 things. The 42th thing it didn't have was a built-in vacuum cleaner system. So we hired a maid. And she's been with us for 23 years. And so we raised our children and built our business. We established offices within driving distance and everything else. But we've been there for life. If you want to have a dream house, it costs you nothing to do this. And I've taught this to audiences, and I had this amazing experience. This man called me up and said, when you talked about your dream house, my wife really loved that idea. So she started putting it together, and we started to discuss it and everything. And we came and we found a home in Better Homes and Gardens that had everything that we wanted. And that became our dream home. We put it on the refrigerator, and we looked at it every single day. And then I got transferred from Toronto to Edmonton. And we went out, and I came out on the Thursday to meet with the new company, and my wife came out on Friday night so we could look at houses. And we went out, and I called a real estate agent. I said, look, we're moving here. We need a house. Could you show us a few houses? And this is what we're looking for. He said, I think I have exactly the house you're looking for. It's not on list yet. It won't be listed until tomorrow. He said, but that's the first house I'll show you. So I picked up my wife at the airport on Friday night. Saturday morning, the real estate agent picked us up at the hotel and drove us to the house that was in Better Homes and Gardens. Wow. It was exactly their dream house. Wow. And they negotiated and they bought it and they moved into it, and they've never been happier in their whole lives. It was such an incredible story. And I've heard that story hundreds of times of people who, once they wrote out a description, a visual description, and took out pictures from magazines and so on, so they could see, their subconscious and superconscious mind could see the target, something happened. They earned more money, so they had a dream house that was expensive. They earned more money, and they had enough money to buy it. It's a miracle, and it does happen. And it can happen for you, unless you're already in your dream house. Then we'll go on to something else. So decide what you want, write it down, make it measurable. Number four is make a list. And this is so important. Make a list of everything that you think of to do to achieve your most important goal. Write it down. And you'll come up with a whole bunch of things, 10 or 20, first time through, but keep adding to the list. You'll probably add to the list for 3 to 6 months. You'll come, I want that as well. Write it down. That's a great idea, right? And so soon the list will be complete. You can't think of anything else. Now your subconscious mind is supercharged. It's supercharged, and it's starting to work and see ideas and opportunities everywhere. So that's number four, because number five is organize the list by priority. Three items on your list, as we said before, will account for 90% of your success in achieving that goal. Three items. And you know the three items are always the hardest. They're always the ones that you're most likely to procrastinate on. You're always most likely to procrastinate on the things that could help you more than anything else. And that is the one goal that we had, the one problem we have to overcome. And how do we overcome it? By repetition. We just say, well, I have tended to procrastinate on this, so by gum, I'm going to do it first. And that's the one thing. Do the worst first. Do the worst first. Do the one. That's what Eat That Frog teaches, is take your most important task, the one you're most likely to put off, and do it first. And if you do it first, you break through this tendency to procrastinate. Suddenly you become so productive, you're dangerous to yourself and others. Suddenly you become so productive, you can't work for another company. You have to have your own business. Anyway, so that's number four. Make a list. Number five, organize the list by priority and say, well, if I could only do one thing on this list, what would it be? If I could only do two things, what would that be? If I could only do three things, what would that be? That's all the organization you need. Then, number five, start on, number six, is start on your number one task every single morning. And it's number one is to write down your goal. Number two is to set priorities. Number three is to choose the most important task. Number four is to organize your list. Number five is to select the three most important things. Number six is start work on the three most important things. And number seven is work on your most important task until it's complete. Is work on your goals list every single day. And if you'll do that, you'll achieve more goals faster than you ever thought possible. And when every time you achieve a goal, you'll set a bigger standard, higher standard for the next goal, and the next goal, and the next goal. So those are the most important things in terms of goal setting. Decide what you want, write it down, make a list, set a deadline, make a list, organize the list by priority, start work on your list, and then do something every day. Do something every day that moves you at least one step closer to your most important goal. Once you start spinning the plates, once you start developing the habit, keep the plates spinning. You keep the plates spinning by doing one thing every day that moves you even a little step towards your goal. If you'll do that, I promise you it'll make you rich. I've taught this, I've used it myself, I developed it myself, and I've taught it to others. And the number one thing that people say to me that makes me happy is, you changed my life, you made me rich. It changed my life. It made me rich. And you know, there was a name attached to a Andrew Carnegie. He called him the Millionaire Maker because more people became millionaires after working for him than any other company in America, because he was very generous. Is the more people produced, the more he paid them. He didn't try to cheap on his staff. He tried to make them rich. So they called him the Millionaire Maker. Napoleon Hill, when he wrote Think and Grow Rich, who interviewed Carnegie and worked with him for more than 20 years, his goal was to be known as the Millionaire Maker, and he was. And the reason why Howard is here is Howard is the modern American Millionaire Maker. He is here to make sure that everybody here becomes a millionaire. And as we say, the first million is really hard. The second million is inevitable. Your job is to get to the first million. Once you get to the first million, that you are now a millionaire in your mentality, in your thought processes, in your thinking, your acting. You're a different human being than you were when you were poor and struggling and worrying about money. Now you are a millionaire. And if something happens and you lose all your money, what took you 7 years, and the average is 7 years from the day you make a decision and write it down. Average is 7 years. Now, you know, you may be halfway or three quarters of the way there. You may be there already. But that's basically how long it takes to become wealthy. And if you look back over your history, you'll find that there was a time in your life, and these are the words, where you decided to get serious. You decided to get serious. Stop pissing around. If I'm going to work, I'm going to work, and I'm going to earn as much money as I can. I'm going to get there early and work harder and stay later and just quit wasting time. This happens, it's you decide from now on. And I meet people all over the time. I said, what's the turning point in your life? And they say the equivalent was the day I decided to get serious. Up to that time, I'd just been fooling around. So once you get serious and you become a millionaire, if you lose it all, you'll make it all back again and much faster. It won't take you 7 years, take you one. Because now you are a millionaire on the inside. And then everything, your outer world is merely a reflection of your inner world. So once you become a millionaire, becoming the second millionaire is almost automatic. When it happened to me, I didn't even know until my accountant said, you know how much money you're worth? And I said, no, it's over $2 million. Jeez, how did that happen? Well, you did this, you did that, and you earned this, and you earned that, and you paid your taxes. I'm sorry, I weep a lot. In California, I pay 53% taxes. Oh my God, I'm just, excuse me while I get control of myself. And my wife handles, Barbara handles all the taxes and accounting. I came in, she said, do you know how much we're paying in taxes? I said, honey, I love you, and how was your day? Taxes, yes. Anyway, but the thing is, you have to make it to pay taxes on it, and so you make it, and then the third million, it starts to fade into, you don't even realize it in three and four and five, and people I know a lot of millionaires. When you become a millionaire, you're going to find yourself sitting next to millionaires on airplanes. I mean, millionaires attract other millionaires to them. You know how many people got rich talking to somebody on an airplane, flying in business class, and they said, well, we're doing this in our business. Geez, I never heard of that. Oh, yeah, this is how it works. Let me send you some information on it. So we spent a fortune developing this process, and they do. A friend of mine got on a plane from the West Coast to the East Coast, going out to look for franchises that were not being used in California. And he sat on the plane next to a guy. He said, what do you do? He said, I sell franchises. It's really, he said, I couldn't find anybody to buy my franchise. We had very successful in the East Coast. He said, but I just couldn't find anybody who was interested in California, so I'm heading home. He said, well, tell me about it. He said, sure. He started talking about it. He said, Jesus, would be perfect. And it was Orange Julius. Remember Orange Julius? Became almost like the Starbucks of drinks. And he went back home, and he went to the biggest new shopping center, and he said, I've got an idea for a store. I said, can I get any space? He said, well, we're sold out of space. It's very popular. However, they called him the next day. They said, one of our tenants canceled, and so we have space for you. So he moved into that space. He started making about $500,000 a year profit. He invested it in more franchises and in real estate. And today he's one of the richest people in Canada. And he said it all came from that guy on the plane who was on his way home without any success. Anyway, once you decide to become a millionaire, that's what's going to happen to you. And if a person comes to you and says, I've got an idea for you, this is God telling you. Now, either it's a good idea or a bad idea, but how do you recognize good ideas? You look at a lot of bad ideas. And so when a good idea comes along, you say, bingo. But you would never have recognized the good idea if you hadn't sort of speculated investigated bad ideas. So this is important. And so those are the ways that you achieve any goal. Decide what you want, write it down, and make it measurable, set a deadline, make a list, organize the list by a priority, and take action on the list, and then do something every day. If you'll do that, I promise you, a year from now, you'll be buying me drinks. Not that I drink, but I might. Anyway, my point is that formula works like a darn. Now, I'm going to give you a second formula so I don't forget. I promised it, but I promised you a formula to double your income and then to increase your income 10 times. I told you about it yesterday, and I told you how it worked and how people said that my 10 years was pessimistic, that it was much easier to achieve it, and they all achieved it in 6 years. They earned 10 times. Working at the same job in the same company on commission, they were earning 10 times what they were earning before they heard this formula. So here's the formula, and I assume you're writing this down. If you're not writing this down, I'm going to have somebody go around and hit you in the back of the head with a stick. There's no way you can memorize this stuff. I have to go over it and over it. I'm not smart. I'm just hardworking. I just repeat this stuff over and over again. I pound it into my head until I can remember. I write it down and review it. I got up early this morning to review these notes. So if I think I'm, you think I'm smart, I'm not smart. I just got good notes to review. Anyway, here's the seven-point formula. Number one, decide to become a millionaire. You cannot believe how powerful your mind is when you make a decision. By gum, I'm going to. You make a decision to get married, and it affects the rest of your life. You make a decision to have a child. It's a 20, 30-year commitment, maybe even longer. You make a decision to move to a person of a particular city or get into a particular business. These have incredible ramifications. They can last for years and years and years. Number one, make a decision to become a millionaire. It's very important. Your superconscious mind has to know where you're heading for. What is your final destination? Like they get into an airplane and the pilots organize the controls, take off the plane and aim the plane for their destination. And all the rest of the technology in the plane flies them directly to that destination. Nowhere else. Your job is to be like that, is to program your mind so you have a single focus in terms of your financial life. I mean, if you're going to work, you might as well be rich. If you're going to work, you might as well be a millionaire or more. And so make a decision. I had no idea until I studied this and studied this, decades of experience and technology and psychological testing. Making a decision is like drilling a well in a rich field. You've got to hit oil. Okay, number two. Make a decision to become wealthy. Number two, wake up before 6 a.m. every morning. This is tough. You want the easy program for success, go to the next room, you know, where they're telling you it's easy to make a lot of money. It's not easy. It's hard, but it's possible. And I'm going to tell you how to double your sales in just a second. I forgot about that. I've got so much good stuff going on. Howard woke me up at 6 o'clock this morning and said, get up and get prepared. I want your best stuff. None of this old stuff. I want new stuff and good stuff and stuff we haven't heard before. Bang, bang, bang on the door. When I went there, he was gone.
It was because you told me you get up at 5:58. So I knew you were awake.
It was a nightmare. I woke up from it, sweating and shaking. Howard's look in my face, in my eyes. Anyway, I'm sorry. So number one, make a decision. Number two, get up before 6 a.m. Wealthy people get up before 6 a.m. In fact, it's been studied, and I have done the studies. I have a book called The Minds of the Super Rich. And it's based on all the research I've done over years about how rich people go from poverty to wealth. And I'm going to publish it as a book. As a matter of fact, well, I'll think about that. But I'm going to publish it as a book because the techniques, methods are based on research. They're really scientific. Do this, get this result. Don't do this, get this result. It's just really great stuff. And I teach it sort of in my own way. So number two is read 60 minutes, get up at 6 p.m., decide to become a millionaire, get up at 6 a.m., and then exercise, whatever you do to get up, and then read for 60 minutes every morning. Bill Gates reads 2 hours a day. Warren Buffett reads 5 hours a day, all in business books. And who are they? They're the richest, some of the richest self-made multi-billionaires in the history of the world. I mean, why? Because they read all the time. Bill Gates reads and underlines, and then he puts all his underlinings, his key points for the book, on his website. You go to Bill Gates' website, you can get what he's reading and what he read and what he thought were the most important points. Is that of value to you learning the most important ideas of one of the richest people in the history of the world, just given to you free? Yes, it is. How many people do it? Only rich people. Or people who intend to be rich. Everybody else watches TV. Jerry Seinfeld. Jeez, I'm tired, honey. Let's go to bed. Turn off. You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, number three is to read an hour each day. Number four is to plan each day in advance. This is this My Success in My Time Management books, which have sold millions of copies, literally in 55 languages, is decide, make a list. There's a little statement that says, feeling listless, make a list. And you'll have a list, and a list inspires you, and it spikes you, and it releases endorphins. And so make a list, and then organize the list by priority, so you can pick the most important thing that you're doing on your list. Plan every day. Number four, organize the list. Number five is listen to educational audio programs in your car. Listen to educational audio programs in your car. This is so important. I've mentioned it before, not because I have produced a lot of them. I have sold about $300 million worth of audio programs over the years through Nightingale Conan, and a little bit of it stuck to my hand. It's called royalty income. And I could retire today on royalty income because there's so much of it. But that's not a good choice for you. The point is that you listen to audio programs, and here's one of the great secrets. I used to teach super learning, speed learning. How do you learn the most from the information that you take in? And in music, there's an interesting discussion, and it is that all the musical notes come from the pauses between the notes. It's not the notes themselves. There's only seven notes, but it's the pauses between the notes that create music. And one of the most famous pieces of music is Beethoven's Fifth. And Beethoven's Fifth, you remember, goes, boom, 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 pause. Boom, 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 pause. Boom, 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 boom. And when it opens up, every audience cheers because it's got such incredible power. So all great music comes from the pauses in between. When you sing a song, it's the pauses. You think, you know, oh, the good life, Tony Bennett, full of fun. Pause seems to be pause the ideal. Oh, the good life. In other words, I got up this morning and listened to this so I would remember it. It's the pauses that make the music. When you are learning, it's the pauses between the information you take in and the minute or the few seconds you think about what you just learned. So when you read and you read a really good line, stop. Turn it over in your mind like something on a barbecue that's being fried. Turn it over in your mind and think, that's an interesting idea. Play with it a little bit and then go on. It's not the material that you're listening to. It's the pauses that you create by pausing the material and thinking about what you just learned. In reading, it's the same thing. When you read something, it's a great line, underline it. Put asterisks, put exclamation points, put question marks, circle stuff. A person should look at a book that you've read, and it should look like a kaleidoscope of colors. Some books I've read three times. First underlining is red, the second underlining is blue, the third underlining is green. Some people do it with the fourth underlining is purple, next underlining is yellow. I mean, that you look at their books that they have read and over, they're all underlined in different colors. It's the underlining and the thinking where the learning takes place. One chapter well read can change your life. So you cannot speed read good material. You can only speed read novels, because novels are just, you know, entertainment. They're like chewing gum for the mind, as we call a novel. There's no food value to it. Stuff that's going to change your life requires pausing. It's really, really important, because you can double and triple the speed at which you learn important things if you pause. Other than that, you read the material and nothing will happen. So read 1 hour each day, and 1 hour a day is 50 hours a year. 1 hour a day is one book a week. 50 books a year. The average adult American reads one nonfiction book a year. That's the average. Half are below that, by the way. If you read one book a week, you'll be getting the equivalent of a university education, but different from a university education. I've taken an MBA, I've got master's degrees and all that stuff. You don't learn anything of value at university. People teaching you don't know anything of value. They've never been out. You know what they say? If you've ever been to the university, they have an expression that all the professors use when they talk to you, they say, in the real world. Have you heard that before?
Yeah.
In the real world, which is a way of saying, this is not the real world. This has nothing to do with the real world. In the real world, you will find, I heard somebody who works in the real world. And so the professors don't know anything. When you learn and you read a good book by Peter Drucker or by Howard Partridge or anyone else, when you read a good book, every word is applicable. It's valuable. It's important. If it's not, go through it. How do you read a book or save 6 hours in reading any book? That's how much it takes to read a good nonfiction book. About 6 hours. How do you get past 6 hours? Well, the answer is if you read the first chapter and it doesn't grab you by the throat, so you can hardly wait to get back to the book, throw it away. Don't do what they made you do in school. You had to read the book even if you didn't like it. Well, this time you read the introduction and the first chapter, and if it doesn't grab you, chuck it, because you'll never remember anything that doesn't grab you. It'll be a complete waste of time. You'll read the book and someone will say, well, what's in that book? You can't think of a word because there's nothing in it. There's nothing grabbed you. Only read stuff that grabs you. Only listen to stuff that grabs you. Don't feel you have a duty to complete it, to finish the book or to finish listening to the audio program. Throw it out the window. I mean, get rid of it. Only take in information that's really helpful to you, that keeps you on the edge of your seat and that keeps you taking notes, okay? And then stop and think about it. Think, how could I apply this to my life? How could I do this? Well, I could do more of this or less of that, as we talked about yesterday. I could start doing this or stop doing that. More, less, start or stop. Okay, now, the next key is for you to plan every day in advance, as we talked about. Make a list and plan every day in advance, and determine your priorities. Determine the top three things that you can do today that will have more value than everything else, and discipline yourself to do only those things until they're complete. Here's some really great words, two words, or three, actually. Yes, four words. Yes, but not now. Yes, I'll do that, but not now. Not now. Not now. That's it. As soon as you say that, all the pressure is gone. Yes, I'll do it, but not now. I have something else that I have to do that's more important. And do what's more important. Yes, but not now. All right, so agree, get along well with everybody, and then do your big three, starting with number one. Listen to audio programs in your car. This is really, I don't want to get ahead of myself. So number one is to, decide to be a monk. Number two is to get up by 6 a.m. Number three is to read 1 hour per day. Number four is to plan every day in advance. Many companies now are incorporating these ideas, and they insist that everyone write out on a yellow pad their goal, their plan for the next day, their organized work. And they leave it on a clean desk. That's another thing that some of the best companies are doing. You must clean your desk before you leave the office. Everything must be put away. No build-up, no piles, no stuff. You can even stick it on the floor or stick it in a drawer, but your desk must be clean. And one thing on your desk is your list of tasks for the next day. This doesn't sound like much, but it will make you rich. It's an organizing principle that changes your mind, changes your ambitions, changes your abilities. And if you're working by yourself, and I work in my own home office, I have to make up a list for myself. So when I get there to the office in the morning, There it is. There's the list. There's the starting point, organized by priority and so on. Listen to audio tapes in your car. And then ask number five. Number six is to ask two questions after every home situation or experience, most of which, 70% on average, will be mistakes. There will be worse uses of your time. So ask two questions. Question number one is, what did I do right? Don't spend a minute thinking about the mistake and feeling sorry for not having done it right. Just say, what did I do right in this situation? And you know what? You'll think, well, I did this, and I did that, and I did prepare, and I was organized, and I did get information, and blah, blah, blah. In other words, when you identify what you do right, you get the maximum learning from what was, unfortunately, a negative situation. And number two, what would I do differently next time? These are the two magic questions that will make you rich. Because if you do not talk, if you don't stop, like time out, and analyze the situation you just had that was not satisfactory, a sales call that didn't work out, a customer demanded their money back, a problem with an employee or something, if you don't stop and think about it, you don't get any benefit from it. So stop, and you think on, what is it you think on? What do you think on? You think on? What do you think on? Come on. Paper. Paper. It's called paper. It's P-A-P-E-R. If it's not on paper, it's nothing. It's cigarette smoke. It has no effect, no advantage, no benefit, no memory. No, it's just terrible. So it's so important. Think on paper. Well, I got into a business once, and I found this idea somewhere in my reading, is write down everything you learned from a bad experience. Well, I got into a business once, and I lost a lot of money. And so I wrote out 22 things, 22 mistakes that I had made, choosing the wrong people, not doing the right product. The number one was not doing sufficient due diligence. Due diligence is my lover in business. I love due diligence. It makes my heart pound. Due diligence means check every detail of the business before you get committed to it. Do your homework, visit, talk to people, go online. Everything you ever want to learn about anything or anybody is online or in the cloud. It's unbelievable. But do your homework. Take the time. Go slow at the beginning. One of the most secrets of success is, at the beginning, go slow. Take it easy. It'll always sound good, but you say, let me check it a little bit. Let me do a little bit of research. Let me do some homework. And then start off not with the concept that it's a good business. Start off with the concept that it's a bad business and somebody's trying to con you. So then you look for material. This is what scientists do. They take a thesis and they say this drug will cure this particular problem. And then they take what is called the negative thesis or the negative hypothesis, and they turn around and say this drug will kill people. And so then they seek everything to prove that this drug will kill people. And if they cannot prove it through every kind of test and measurement, then the original hypothesis has been proven. So you start off with the original idea. You try to prove the opposite, that this is a bad idea. If you can't prove that it's a bad idea, then by default, it's a good idea. So that's the way top people think. They don't say, oh, here's an idea. Let me think of every reason why it's a good idea. No. Do your homework. How many times in life have you said, if I had just done a little more research, I wouldn't have made that mistake? How many times have you said that? Oh, God, you can't count them now. So what happens? What you need is you know what from California. You need a little bit of discouragement from getting into stuff. Just do your homework. It's one of the great principles. And the way you do it is, what did I do right? What will I do differently next time? And write them down. And you'll be astonished. You'll step on the accelerator of your learning curve, and you'll learn and get better faster and faster. And then number seven, and I used to say that number seven was treat other people pretty well. But I realized this morning that number seven is resolve, that no matter what happens, you will never give up. You will never quit. You will persist until you succeed. What's one of the best affirmations I ever read is, I will persist until I succeed, or I persist until I succeed, present tense, and say it over and over again. I am unstoppable. I never give up. I never quit. Nothing can stop me. You can't stop me with a 45 caliber pistol that you get the first bullet in right, because nothing can stop me. And just keep telling yourself that. And remember, what you say, you become what you think about. You become what you say to yourself. So say to yourself over and over again, I never give up. I never give up. And tell your spouse, you wonderful characteristic about you, you never give up. You never quit. You, when you say, when she says, oh, I'm done for the day, I say, oh, you never give up. You never quit. And just tell everybody around you, tell your kids, boy, one of the reasons I love you is because you never give up. You never quit. Become a never give up family. And what that does, it puts steel in your spine. It makes you makes you unstoppable. And when you become unstoppable, your income is guaranteed. Now, here's the crown, or the cream on this cake. And it's called the law of, my mind goes blank on me. It's compounding, I'm sorry. Einstein said that compounding is the eighth wonder of the world. It's the most powerful of all forces. And what it means is that if you invested 3% at the age of Christ, invested $1 at 3%, it would be worth, with compound interest, half the money in the world today. It's absolutely astonishing. So in compounding, your income is going to be determined by your level of productivity, by how much you produce of value for other people. And you can increase your level of productivity over and over again. There's no limit. So what you start off with is you start off with your current level of productivity, which is one. Just say one. And you decide to increase your productivity by 0.5% per week. Now, you can increase your productivity 10 times by reading and applying one of my books or one of Howard's books, especially his book about intentions. I have it on my desk. What's the title? FTI. FTI, Failure to Implement. Failure to Implement. That book alone will probably make you rich if you took it to heart. So what you can do is, what I'm saying is 0.5% a week, 2% a month. And I keep asking the question, can you do that? Can you implement your, is it 2% per month? Say yes.
Yes.
Okay. 2% a month is roughly 25% a year. So if you were to get 0.5% better per week, which is so small, it's infinitesimal, 2% a month, 25% in a year, and you did that every year, it would compound. At 3 years, you would have doubled your income or more. At 9 years and 3 months, you would have increased your income 10 times by doing those seven things. Get up at 6, read an hour, plan every day in advance, start work on your most important task, listen to audio programs, ask two questions after every situation. What did I do right? What did I do differently? And notice I said situation, not failure or anything else. And number seven is resolve in advance that you'll just never give up. If you do those seven things, your productivity will go up at least 2%, maybe 20% a week, a month. But it'll be 25% a year. In 3 years, or less than 3 years, you'll have doubled your income. In less than 10 years, you will have increased your income 10 times. Except that everybody I give this formula to says it only takes 6 years to increase your income 10 times. Now, if everybody says the same thing, please believe them. If they say the same thing, then by God, do it. Do the same thing because it works. All I ask you to do, by the way, is try these formulas, these seven-part recipes out. Try them for 1 week. If you try them for 1 week, or 1 month, I'm sorry, 1 month, try them for one, and then see what happens at the end of the month. Remember, what you're doing is you're stepping up to your mental computer, you're reprogramming it so that you're a highly productive person. And being a highly productive person means you're happier, you're healthier, you have high self-esteem, better relationships, better respected by everybody else, you make more money, you become rich, and you live in a big house on the hill. Is that a good goal? And if you'll do these things, my promise to you, every single person I've shared these ideas has come back and said, you changed my life. You made me rich. You changed my life. You made me rich. Howard's and my job is to change your life and make you rich. Howard brings me here to help him with his job, which is to make you rich. That's all he thinks about all day long. He's devoted his entire life and career to making you rich. And he is so good at it. He's so good. He's the best in the business. That's why I love him. Thank you all for being here. Unless you want me to speak a little bit longer on sales and how to make more and better, faster sales, if you want me to do that, I'd be pleased to stay a little bit longer. It's up to you.
Yeah. So a couple more minutes?
Okay.
I think
we do have a few more minutes. We are going to our lunch break, but are you guys willing to sacrifice another 10, 15 minutes of your lunch? Okay, so if you want to go ahead and go through those next steps, that would be wonderful. Yes.
Thank you. I've developed a one-day seminar on the subject of the psychology of selling, which I've mentioned. And Howard tells me that you're some of the smartest people in America, and you could take a lot of information in a short period of time. Is that true? Did anybody not understand the question? So I'll just give you a condensed version. The psychology of selling, which is based on my 20 years of knocking on doors, tens of thousands of doors, tens of thousands of interviews with customers and non-customers, hiring, training, and building 22 sales organizations in different products and services in different parts of the world, and paying out millions of dollars to people who became superstars. I mean, I know a lot about the subject, but here they are. Number one part of selling is prospecting, is finding qualified people who can and will buy and use your product within a reasonable period of time. Now, how do you determine a qualified prospect? Sit down with a piece of paper and write it down. What is a qualified prospect? And sit down with other people in your business and write it down, write it down, write it down. The worst thing that you can do is spend time with unqualified prospects. Your time is your life. Your time is your fortune. Your time is your health and happiness. Nothing makes you more depressed than having wasted hours of time traveling to and from a conference or meeting with a potential customer and finding they weren't a customer at all. So therefore, you start off by prospecting. You know you should be able to tell if you are meeting with a prospect personally within 17 minutes if they're going to buy. Within 17 minutes, they can buy your product or service. That's the statistic. So you shouldn't have to spend an hour going there, an hour going there, and get on the phone. Anyway, define what is a good prospect. So you know what to ask about and talk about when you're... A good prospect, by the way, has enough money. If a prospect says to you, I can't afford it, I don't have the money, you say, oh, God, I'm so sorry. Like they just told you they had cancer and were dying within a week. You say, I'm so sorry. I won't take up any more of your time. And get out. Don't spend time with people who have so little shame that they will admit to a complete stranger that their finances suck. I mean, this is not a good prospect. Everybody, the right words, if the person can use it and benefit from it, they could find the money to buy it. Everything you ever bought, if it was a car, a house, a great dress, boy, if you liked it, you found the money to buy it. Okay, so number one is prospecting. And number two is building rapport or establishing rapport with the customer. And you do this by asking questions. There's a great line, and it's the line that will make you rich in customer relationships. Line number one is basically this, listening builds trust. Listening builds trust. Talking doesn't build trust. Presenting information does not build trust. Listening builds trust. And how do you get a chance to listen? You ask good questions. asking good questions triggers the customer's speaking, and listening builds trust. And the interesting thing is, when you listen to a person closely, their self-esteem goes up. They like themselves more. They feel happier about themselves just by being able to express themselves freely to you. And you ask follow-up questions. The best follow-up questions, too, number is, and what did you do then? And then what happened? Because almost everything a person tells you is can be followed by one of those questions. And then you listen and nod your head and just listen and shut your mouth. Don't talk. Talking does not make sales. Listening builds trust. And trust is the essential ingredient in selling. Number three is identifying needs. And identifying needs is where you start to ask the customer what they're doing now in your area of product or service. And they will tell you. And you ask more follow-up questions. And it's very important that you take notes. Write it down. Take notes in front of the customer. May I write this down, Mr. Customer, Mrs. Customer? And write it down. Take notes. This shows the customer that you are really serious about helping me achieve my goals. If you sit there with a big smile like a Cocker Spaniel and don't take any notes, that's saying to the customer, subtly, I don't really care anything about what you're saying. I only care about making a sale. So I'm going to wait until you shut up so I start to, I can talk. Come on, shut up. Keep talking. No, the more the customer talks and the more you listen, the more you build trust. And trust is the essential ingredient. It is the, they say, sine qua non, without which nothing. It's the most important part of the sales process. And everything that you do builds or lowers trust. Everything word you say increases or decreases your level of trust. So remember, you're here to build trust, not to sell a product. I remember one of the best salesmen, he was the president of a company that wanted my business, and my business is worth over $2 million a year. And I had already decided on a competitor and was already under contract. I had not signed with a competitor. And he came to me and he said, he's heard through the grapevine that I'm looking to buy this service from my company. I said, yes, he called me. He said, may I meet with you just for a few minutes to see if we can help you in some way? He was so gracious. And I said, well, sure. So I set up a meeting. He brought two other experts from his company, and he sat down with me, and he asked me questions about what I was doing and when I was doing it and what the volume would be and everything, all the questions that the other company had never asked. The other company was the giant in the industry, and they treated me sort of like a customer at McDonald's, you know, just buy, give the no investigation, no nothing. We were importing cars from Japan. Okay, go into this line. I mean, but they were the giant. I think, well, you got to go with the big guys. These guys were the little guys, the competitors. And all they did was ask me questions. And they said, you know, I think we may be able to help you, but are you going to be in town for a couple of days? And I said, yes. He said, could we take you out for dinner tonight? We'd really like to spend more time with you and just get to know you better. So I asked my guys, I had four or five people there, and we all went out for dinner to a Chinese restaurant. I still remember, and all they did was entertain us and laugh and told stories and everything else, not a word about business. Then the next day he called up and said, I really enjoyed our dinner. Could we get together again? Can you see where this is going? And I began to like him. His name will come to me. It was an interesting name, like it was Nick Swindler. Or something. It was a funny name like that. Anyway, he then said, I'd like to come and show you what we can do to help you do your business even better. And he came and made a great presentation, showed me all the holes that were in the other presentation, all the things they would do that was different. And it was all personal relationships, working with my import managers, working with our parts manager, and so on. And all the guarantees and warranties they would make. And they said, and we really want your business. We really want your business. That's one of the greatest closing techniques of all, by the way. is tell people, you know, I really want your business. I want to take care of you. I want to be your supplier in this area. That makes a big difference, especially if the person likes you. So don't be afraid to say it if it's true that you want it. By the way, there's a factor. I don't want to get off it. It's a factor in business called turning away bad business. Occasionally, when you talk to a specific customer, you will feel this is not good business. There's something wrong with this person. They're too bitter. They're too suspicious. They're too critical. And you say, you know, ask yourself, would I take this person home to have dinner with my family every Sunday night? And you're going to be doing a lot of stuff online and on the phone and so on. But if you don't feel comfortable, remember there is bad business, and your job is to have the courage to turn it away. And just say, you know, I don't think that we're the right persons for you at this time. And if ever we can help you, please give us a call. Always be gracious. Always be professional. Always be polite. So you can never go wrong, no matter what the other person is. So the next part of selling is building trust, asking questions, writing down the answers so that you've got them in writing. Number four is your presentation. The sale is always made in the presentation. I told you about this 22-year study that cost millions of dollars. It was in the presentation where the customer decided to buy or not. However, if the presentation came too soon, you started talking about your product before you had built trust and identified their true needs. If you started talking about your product before that, you killed the sale. Product talking too early kills the sale. It's like driving a stake through its heart. So take the time, wait. And it's a very interesting time in a sales presentation where you have asked enough questions. And at that point, the customer changes physically. They stand up, they sit down, they go and get a cup of coffee. They're ready for the presentation. They tell you, it's the most, I don't know what I'm talking about. If you had this experience, the customer says something like, well, he's been answering questions. Well, what you got? I mean, that's very common. You know, what you got? What can you show me? And in other words, they invite you. Now it's time. Showtime. The music is on. The stage is lit. It's showtime. It's now, this is where you make the sale. And in the sale, your whole presentation is simply to show the customer the ir factor in your product. Is this, because of this, you'll do better. Because of this, it's cheaper. Because of this, we can serve you faster. Because of this, we can solve your problems quickly. Because of this, in other words, you're always talking about how better off the customer will be than they are today with your product or service. That's the only thing that matters. And here's the interesting thing. It's one benefit that you offer is the reason they'll buy. You can give them 5 or 10 benefits, but there's one reason that they'll buy. And you know, when we call this the hot button. The hot button in selling is they will light up when you talk about that benefit. They'll say, well, how does that work anyway? They'll ask you for more information or what happened. And I mean, they'll pursue that particular benefit to learn about it. That, and you know it, bing, you've hit the hot button. This is the way you can help this customer more than anything else that he or she values. And of course, there's one major reason and two minor reasons. But the major reason, you need to find it. You're on a hunting trip. You're on a detective investigating a case. You're asking questions and presenting, and you show this and say, would this be of interest to you? Would this be something that you would use? Would this be something that would help you in your current situation? Ask for feedback. That means you care about them. That means you're not just here to sell something, you are there as a helper. And by the way, you can say this. I don't see myself as a salesperson. I see myself as a professional helper. My job is to help you achieve your goals faster and cheaper. That's my goal. That's why you would be interested, or to improve the quality of your life at a low price with high quality and unconditional guarantees. I mean, you're there to help them. So number five is answering objections. All sales have objections. And the objections will come out. The person's objections are top of mind. And when you finish your presentation, you can say, well, what do you think? And they'll say, well, what about this and what about that? And what about this and what about that? And answer every objection with, that is a good question. And I think I have a really good answer for you. I've heard that question before. Turn objections into questions immediately before you answer them. Never use the word objection. Just use the word question. That is a good question. Or that's a good point. Or that's a good observation. Let me see if I can answer that for you. Well, what we have found in working with other clients is probably the best answer. In other words, it's tried, proven, tested. You've heard it before. And it makes them comfortable. Makes them happy to know that you've thought through their concern. And they will reach a point where they have no further objections. And you say, do you have any more questions that I can answer for you? Do you have any more questions that I can answer for you? And when they say no, you say, well, then you close the sale. Now, I've written down, in my program, remember I told you, 24 techniques for closing the sale. It's in book and audio cassette. You can get it and listen to it. But let me give you three or four closing techniques. Number one, best close in the world is the invitational close. The invitational close is very simple. Well, if you don't have any questions, why don't you give it a try? Why don't you give it a try? And that is so good. It's the best single closing technique because it sounds like really it's an easy decision. It's just a try. You're buying a house for life. You're just giving it a try. You're buying a new piece of machinery for the life. Give it a try. Why don't you give it a try? You know, it's guaranteed in any case. That's the best of all closing techniques. But you can't ask it too early. You always have to ask, do you have any other questions that I haven't answered for you? Always invite them to say, no, it's closing time. Don't pretend you never heard those words before. So you say, the second closing technique is, do you like what I've shown you so far? And the person says, yeah, it looks pretty good. You say, well, then the next step is this. We need to get out your documents, turn them out, write the person's name on the top, or the person's company on the top of the document, and write today's date. And this is also called the order sheet close. But what you do when you say, well, then the next step is this, as if it's now closing time. It's now time to wrap it up so you can get back to work. A third one you do is you can use what is called the secondary close. When a person says, I'm not sure, but you say, may I ask you a question? What is your exact building address for here? A building address is a secondary item. But if they give you their building address, they've bought. And there's other closing techniques that you can get from my material. But you should learn them all because on occasion, you'll get an opportunity to use those exact words. They're all one line. Use those exact words, and you'll make the sale. And then you become confident and use them again and again. And your sales will double and triple and quadruple. You go up 25% per month, 2% per month, 25% per year, triple your income in 3 years, increase it 10 times in 10. Is that a good deal?
It's a great deal.
And number seven, last point, and then I'll let you go, is resales and referrals. The first sale is always the hardest, as I've said before, but the second sale is easy if the customer is satisfied. So your job is to take really good care of your customers. You see, there's a wonderful saying from a book by Carl Sewell, who wrote the book Customers for Life, which I recommend that you read. Customers for Life is this motive, and he runs a Cadillac dealership. He started with a small dealership. He has the biggest Cadillac dealership in the world. And people come from all over the world to visit him in teams to see how he does it. It's in Texas, too. Not in Houston. But Carl Sewell has developed a system for serving customers, a mentality and a practice that is wonderful, wonderful. When you read it, you want to go out and serve your customers better and better, and that will bring them back again and again and tell their friends. So pretty soon, with Carl's soul, he doesn't have to do any advertising. Everybody who ever buys a Cadillac from Carl Sewell tells everybody to buy a Cadillac from Carl Sewell. All they do is they spread out by acres and acres and acres. The biggest Cadillac dealership in the world, starting from a little shop. Why? Because they take such good care of their customers that their customers come back and bring their friends. So that's what I wanted to share with you, the Big Seven. Follow it in order, like our recipe. Don't deviate from the recipe. Go slow. Don't be afraid to come back a second time. You say, no, I'd really like to think about what you've told me and then come back with some ideas that might help you achieve your goals. Would that be okay? That's what IBM did. Yeah,
give him a Mr. Brian Tracy. Incredible. Living legend.
Thank you. Thank you, AC.
Fabulous.
Oh, yeah. Give me your hand.
Michael, thank you. Got him?